that will make it possible to make available these very first-line funds for continuing our education in this state. Second, we had a desire to specially aid urban universities, that is, universities which were in a position to help urban areas to solve urban problems. They included such universities as Columbia, NYU, Syracuse, and SUNY in Buffalo. And that was embodied in this higher education bill. And that was piloted through finding the conference successfully. Also, we have in our state a student incentive grant program in which the state gives a kind of a semi-scholarship to students of merit. And I have gotten involved in this proposition. The U.S., which tended to match those funds in order to encourage more states to do it. So a change was needed in the formula by which those funds were matched. That was in the higher education bill, and again it got through. And finally, the bill increased the amount available in loans to undergraduates to $5,000 in the aggregate, and to graduate students to $10,000 in the aggregate, or rather, $5,000 base of play now in law, and the $10,000 base of play now in law. The increases in the new bill were $12,500 in gross and through the college course for undergraduates, and $25,000 for graduate students, and all other advantageous provisions, including payment of interest while you were in school, were attained. And of course, you can understand all of how important it was to keep that in the bill, and it was kept in the bill. So the time was spent in your terms, even though it was costly. I don't regret the cost. This has been my constant practice in all the 34 years I've been in public life, and I'm glad to extend it. Now, in the time that remains, I'd like to talk with you about one subject, though I'll answer questions on any subject in the federal establishment. But the one subject is the quality of life. New Yorkers. From this, of course, it is true more than anything else that a man does not live by bread alone. And so, what happens in respect of health? We've already dealt with education. And by the way, these activities also extend to elementary and secondary education, in which we've gotten some good breaks for our state, which Lord knows least, in health, in retirement, and in other activities which represent the quality of life. Indeed, in our industrial process today, we have a very grave problem with the quality of working life. Young workers feel very much put upon by the routine nature of the U.S. industrial process, its repetitive nature, and the fact that they feel it squeezes the creative aspects of living, and also by the fact that they have no particular role in decision making. A challenging question to you, may I say, for example, that the reason we are suffering such serious unemployment in autos and in steel is not attributable to overstayed the market for big hogs. I'm a very American who's not interested in small hogs. So one of our problems in the field of the working life and the quality of working life is how to get workers to look in on that kind of decision making. And yet, in a very strange way, and it's something which you young people should be very thoughtful about, organized labor rejects the opportunity to join in decision making, which I feel is a very old-fashioned idea, but very true, because they don't want to be charged with losses. They want a piece of the profit, but they don't want to be charged with losses. And they want to stick their heads in the sand as to the financial situation of the business in which they work. That's a very serious problem, because I'm a great pro-labor senator. I don't mean I'm a great senator, I mean I'm a great friend of labor. And it's a real problem to reconcile those views. I have high hopes that the new management of the AFL-CIO, which is very modern in the shape of Lane Kirkland and Tom Donahue, are going to give this the highest priority and make rather the usual than the unusual the fact that a Douglas Fraser, who's the head of the United Auto Workers Union, has gone on the Chrysler board. That's the way to go. And we'll have a better system because of it. But it's unusual that he did that, because that is not the accepted norm of labor. Now, getting back to the quality of living for New York, I've chosen a few subjects to deal with life's necessities and the situation, as it were, from the cradle to the grave, which is the quality of living. And I'll go over with you briefly how we depend on the federal government, to what extent and in what fields, importantly, as well as some of the indicia of what makes the quality of life in New York. First, it should interest you to know that some $36 billion a year flows in here from the federal government into the state in various kinds of payments, direct and indirect. Now, the economy of this state is much greater than that, as you will readily understand, but $36 billion a head in every year. And heavily we look to the federal government for municipal aid. You know, New York City was saved from bankruptcy beginning in 1975. The bankruptcy which would inevitably have involved the state of New York because of federal aid which came in 75 and 78, which I handled in 75 because the other senator, Jim Buckley, didn't believe it, and which I handled with a very gifted partner, Pat Moynihan, in 78. So we look for the federal government for that New York City assistance, and that for other cities. Buffalo had to have some rescue too. almost $4 billion are comes into the state through those, and I've been very active in those. Child nutrition and foster care bring us a little over $1 billion. And interestingly enough, we get a good deal of foreign aid. Foreign aid is rarely translated into business of the state. But our state, which is a huge exporter, gets about $700+ million worth of business out of foreign aid every year in programs which involve exports from the state of New York. And finally, the various housing programs produce around $800 million a year in New York. And we also, or we are not preeminent in defense contracts, receive about $2 billion a year in defense contracts in this state. We're number 4 in the nation in that regard. Now, the subjects which I'd like to mention to you are retirement income security. That involves Social Security and private pension plans. And with the prospect that we are about to double in the next 20 years, the number of people over 65 years of age, you can see how important it is. Social Security is bumping its head up against a very serious ceiling. Employers and employees are now paying, in round figures, about 7% each of payroll in respect to Social Security. And nonetheless, Social Security still remains underfinanced. And yet, the individual receiving Social Security finds it hard to live on what he receives. So there has been a tremendous push for private enterprise, income retirement plan, pension plan, these back. And there in 1974, I authored what is popularly called ERISA, which is an acronym for a law which assures the pensioner that his pension will be funded, and that when he retires, he'll get what he's supposed to get, and that the employer cannot pay it, then we have a federal government corporation called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which guarantees pension. So there is where there should be a big buildup in private pension plans. Social Security covers 115 million Americans. That's almost half our population. That's about half our population. Private pension plans cover somewhere between 30 and 35 million Americans. So you can see the gap. We have a long way to go in private pension plans if we're going to take a strain off Social Security. That strain is partially money, as I described. It is also partially a dissatisfaction by young workers who object to paying so much of their compensation to Social Security and then having to wait 25 or 30 years before they can enjoy Social Security. Very understandable. So the private pension system is critically important. Now, by way of the improvement of that system, and by the way, in the very last Congress which just called, my colleague, Senator Williams of New Jersey, and I saved the pensions of about 8 million people who are on what is called multi-employer pension plans, which were about to be wiped out for various reasons, and we saved them for the new bill, etc. Thus, we have done a good deal our city. The local people in the area, where there are very few doctors because of this poverty status, they don't know where to go for ordinary medical care. So they crash into the emergency rooms, a few hospitals. So we now have a program, which I have the honor to be the author, which is financing such hospitals to put up clinics outside their emergency rooms so as to deal with this very serious situation. And finally, in terms of mental health services, we need to increase the number of clinics we have. They now serve, for example, in the city of New York, 1,700,000 patients, and that's still an act. That's a very pressing need. Finally, I'm a great believer in health prevention. In other words, in periodic examination in order to catch signs of serious illness, which includes occupational diseases. There are some occupations that are cancer-inducing, among them working with a chemical called the sulfur chloride, which is used in plastic. So a national health plan should include a cost-effective health prevention and screening program. It's a specialty with me, and I hope to be able to serve. The next is housing. We've got a dreadful shortage of rental housing in this state, especially in the big cities. And in order to promote rental housing, we must, as we did after World War II, give some special federal guarantees, even for moderate and middle-income men. Otherwise, it can't be done at a price they can afford today. And there are various means by which mortgage interest rates can be reduced. One of those means is a new idea, which is called a variable interest rate. That is, a mortgage may have by its terms provide only for a short term, let us say 3 years, but the mortgage itself may be for 20 years. But written into the mortgage is a provision that if general interest rates go up, then that interest rate may also go up automatically. And if general interest rates go down, that interest rate may then go down automatically. So that enables an owner or a family to get a mortgage for the long term and does not expose the mortgagee, that is the person who buys the mortgage, to the vicissitude of rising and falling interest rates, which are adjusted periodically. 3 years is probably a pretty good time. Generally speaking, there are many other schemes, but that's the essence of what I have in mind. Lastly, in the quality of life, I want to deal with neighborhood conservation. You know, one of the worst things that happened to the decaying older cities, and they're all decaying older cities, including Omaha. One of the worst things that's happening is that the maintenance what is called their infrastructure, that is their bridges, their conduits, or whatever, for electricity or water or telephone, or in New York City's case, and soon in Buffalo, in some ways are deplorably unmaintained. For example, it is estimated that a great deal of New York's only in campaign time, when the public's really interested, and when all these things tend to come out. So do not overlook, in this case, the medium for the message. The medium may have its faults, but the message determines the quality of your life and that of your families and of the community around you. And therefore, as we get to be more complex as a society, politics becomes more and more an essential element in your life. And it's fun, too. You'll never meet the variety of people that you will meet in politics, or get to know them as well. You really touch a very open mirror of our society. And so I urge you as students, without any regard to party or candidate, to participate. And I urge you as you get along and get into the world, to continue to participate. You don't have to run for office if you don't want to. But there's no reason why you shouldn't. For a time, experience, either in political work or whatever party you choose, or in running for office, or helping others to run for office, or in seeking to occupy office, the civic responsibility and the world of interest, which is thereby created. And I hope that some of the creative ideas of which government is capable, by no means does all intelligence reside in government in our country. I hope that we never have a polity which works for government. The surest guarantee of freedom is the fact that 90% of you will wear two hats, one as a voter and the other as a consumer and worker in the private enterprise system. But government should command some of your time and interest for the two reasons that I've given. One, fun, and the other, responsibility. And I hope that if you take nothing else away with you from what I've said today, I will have engendered some interest in that regard. Thank you. the word disarming. It's not pursued disarmament by them. So my record has been consistent to support the military authorizations and appropriations, a wearing conscience of their generally a lot of things wrapped up in one bill. I felt that the desirable preponderated over the undesirable. There's always something undesirable in any such bill. So that was point number two. And point number three is I have joined with other senators in espousing causes respecting our military affairs, again, without an initiative by the generals. For example, I'm the ranking member because of the enormous seniority New York has given me.